Welcome back. It's been a minute, but this is Eben Matthews, co-founder of Macroverse and maker of various things. We're back with another episode in our Makerverse series as part of the Mythmakers podcast. This episode is awesome, and we're way late putting it out. So apologies to the incredible creators that we have here with us. If you are listening to this today, before you even listen to it, or okay, fine, after, you got to go support their series, Seasons. They're doing a launch for the second volume, which will also come to Macroverse, but you got to pick up the hardcover. You got to pick up the graphic novel version of it, the print edition of it, the special collectible edition of it via Indiegogo. That campaign is actually ending in about 36 hours. So if you're listening to this right now, make sure you take advantage of it. You may still be able to pick it up after the fact, but you don't want to miss the campaign. Help them hit some additional stretch goals. I know we're at the last minute, but these guys are awesome. Their series is awesome. Check it out on Macroverse as well. Back everything they're doing. This is legit, seriously cool stuff, and we had a lot of fun having a great conversation with these guys. So here is Adam and I with the creators of Seasons. Bum, bum, bum.
Cool. Let's just dive in, and this is how we start the show. So, I'm gonna occasionally I do this to Adam. I'm gonna put you on the spot to do the introduction. So, bring us in.
Ah, excellent. Yes. So, welcome to the Macroverse podcast. This is Mythmakers with me, Adam Martin, and my co-host and friend and partner, Eben Matthews. And we like to kind of dig into stories and storytelling and all that kind of fun stuff. Eben, how's it going?
I'm well. Adam, how are you?
Very, very cheerful, thank you, at the moment. struggling along here in rather smoky LA. And welcome to our guests.
Welcome to our guests, and welcome to the podcast, and welcome to the apocalypse. Can you guys take a moment and introduce yourselves?
All right.
Don't all go at once.
All right. Well, I'll go. My name's Anthony. Anthony Gonzalez Clark. I'm the artist of Seasons, and yes, and I am enjoying the apocalypse. Yes.
Fantastic. Uh-oh, did we lose that?
No, I'm here. For some reason, I don't know, it will cut out for me. Like, it kicks me out for some reason. But but I'm gonna keep watch and keep fruitful here. And so, but
we're gonna power through. Yes. So tell everyone who you are.
All right, hi guys. My name is Nandor Fox Schaefer, and I'm the creator and writer of Seasons.
Fantastic. Amongst some other things as well, right? Which we should touch on momentarily. So, so this is we call this a Makerverse episode of the podcast, where we talk to the people that we're working with in various ways on the Macroverse platform and dig into some creative process stuff. We want to hear a little bit about kind of the inspiration and where all of this goodness came from. Mm-hmm. Nandor, why don't you start, as I'm assuming kind of the germ of the idea for Seasons came from you. Just give us a little backstory and kind of bring us to maybe the beginnings of that idea and kind of how it became something that you decided to pour your heart, soul, and life into.
Yeah, of course. I'd love to share that with you guys. I had just graduated high school, and I was on my way into college, and kind of in that interim there between the two, I was kind of met myself with like a question of, you know, wondering, okay, what do I want to do with my life? What, you know, what are my dreams or my aspirations and so on? And I've always, you know, enjoyed reading comics and storytelling, and I'm a big nerd when it comes to reading books, and I'm just like absorbed into stories, and I'm a big movie guy and all that kind of stuff. So I'm really captivated by storytelling, and I had dabbled in some writing on some websites, like doing blogs and stuff when I was younger, about like 12, 13 years old. I would, you know, write some blog posts, you know, anonymously. You know, no one knew I was that young, but I would just write about, you know, games and different things I was into at the time. And I would get noticed. Like, I remember on GameInformer.com, I wrote a blog and it was chosen as like one of the best of the week when I was like 13 years old. And I was like, hey, like people like maybe my voice or like what I have to say about certain things. And so I just kept writing and writing. But so I was kind of interested in journalism at a point. And then I kind of veered off there because I got tired of writing about other people's things or like other other creations, and I wanted to write my own. And so I thought, well, what, you know, what can I do at this point in my life? Because I knew I wasn't you know, like as experienced as so many other great writers and everything, but so I was like, well, what can I do? And I was like, well, let me try comics, let me see if I could like actually think of something that would be of interest to other people that would be fun and exciting. And I grew up, you know, of course, with a lot of superhero comics growing up, and I always, you know, had favorite characters and I loved their abilities. And but when you I thought, you know, you get introduced to a character, you get to find out who they are and their origins, and then, you know, you're left with that character. And I was like, what if there is a character where, you know, their abilities and their power set like could change. And, so that was the first idea of Seasons that like kind of brought, the story to mind. And, that was like a part of it. And then I thought, okay, well then what would that look like? And like what's the reasoning behind someone's like powers changing? And I thought, well, you know, seasons change and, as you go through your life, you know, all these changes happen. And so it just change kept that key word there kept, popping up. And, there was just a natural kind of merging of the two. And I thought, okay, this guy's abilities, you know, whoever he may be, will change depending upon the seasons. And then it turned into this like 1 year journey story of this young man realizing his potential and like the person he could be, and what those powers could be an allegory to, and all the symbolism that came from that. And so it just like kind of opened this floodgate of possibility and symbolism that I wanted to explore. And then that's when I started, you know, writing down everything I could about the entire series, and where I could take it.
Nice.
That's very cool. I mean, I will say, like, I think your pre social media dopamine hit from Game Informer right. was not wrong in that. It's a pretty ambitious concept as sort of an early you know, creation. I think, I mean, I love it. It's you know, certainly some of the earliest stuff that I and we were writing were more like, you know, here's someone that needs revenge on somebody else. Let's go kill them. so I think it's really cool to, you know, kind of have that perspective and sort of be looking through a broader lens, a more introspective lens. And I think a lot of, especially younger, you know, creators or people earlier in their career tend to kind of look through. I think that's awesome.
You. Yeah, and like it was you know, I did second guess myself a lot, like, because, you know, I was like 17, 18 kind of like developing the story, and I thought, you know, like I was self-aware enough and conscientious enough to go like, is this actually a good idea? You know, because like I understand I'm young and I'm like, I don't, you know, maybe this isn't a good idea, but I thought, well, I'll run with it. And, you know, I'll see if other people think it's a good idea, and that will kind of be like the confirmation I need.
That was going to be a question, actually. Like, that's what awesome. Do you around who are kind of creative in their own right that you could bounce ideas off, or was that, were you kind of working pretty more or less in a vacuum that way?
Pretty much a vacuum. I mean, the only person that I was really able to kind of bounce things off was my brother, and we've always been really close, and we've always shared a lot of ideas with each other, and we create music together, so we're like creative together. So like, he was the only person that I knew that could like give me kind of the go ahead, or at least like, no, this is like a great idea, like you should, you know, you should run with it and kind of explore it. And he was the first person I ever let read like my scripts, and he read like the first issue of Seasons like when I first wrote it. And he was like, dude, this is great. Like, don't stop writing. So that, and like, he's super critical. Like, he's like, him and I, we're different in that respect. I'm more open to things. He's a lot more closed off to things. So like, when he likes something, he like really likes it. And he goes all in. So, that can be a blessing and a curse. But for me at the time, you know, when I needed someone to kind of make sure I wasn't just, you know, by myself and thinking it was a neat idea, he really helped me out with that.
Nice.
That's awesome. We all need those people. So I guess that, you know, let's try to bring these worlds together. So you've got this cool idea, you've got some validation from someone that you trust around going ahead with it. And then the other thing that I will say struck me when this, you know, popped up for us and when you and I started talking is, you know, especially again as sort of an early project, as potentially kind of the first significant project, you found somebody to illustrate it, which is also kind of way beyond what most of us have the chance to, you know, pull into something at that stage. So Anthony, how did you get involved and how did he talk you into bringing your enormous talent to this project?
The easy answer was money, right? It was that.
that always helps.
So at the time, I was pursuing comic books like full time. Like, I had quit a job working at the bank. I had just gotten married. I had the savings. I had no idea what I was doing. And I really, really was putting myself out there and just trying to land something that I could just sustain, just something that can get us by. And at the time, my mindset was like, it's got to be this. I can't work for any less than this. Like, it has to be this price, like this page rate. This will be enough. And if I do two page or whatever, right? And so I put it on a couple places, like on DeviantArt and Behance and anywhere else I can put like a portfolio. Nondor is just, that's how it was through DeviantArt. He messaged me through there, and that's pretty much how it all began. We talked about page rates and we did one page just to check it out. What do you call the page again?
Like a trial page,
trial page.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So we just did a trial page, and I was very nervous because I really needed this. And so again, see, at first it had nothing to do with like, I didn't read the story, nothing. I just like, and I was just happy because I had parameters. I was like, I need to work with somebody who has something written. Mm-hmm. They can't just tell me like they need to develop an idea with me. Oh, I help them write a script. Cause right. I'd already done two projects before this that were sort of, one was kind of complete, but I had to sort of, I wasn't getting paid for it. The other one was not complete at all. And he was making it up as he was going along. And I thought that's how, you know, it's how you sort of do it. It's kind of right. It's so, but that got me, that helped me. That was just like, that helped me develop some comic book skills before I got into doing Seasons. So I saw all the stuff that I was doing wrong. So it's good that Seasons wasn't the first thing. So when Seasons came around, when Nondor came around, it was, you understand, like it was such a blessing. It was such a blessing. It was such an answered prayer that working with Nandor, and then it eventually turned into like an actually good story. Like an actual, like it was like an actual good friendship. It was a good friendship. Good, you know, we got along really well. And then the story just sort of helped me develop myself as an artist as we went along. And I yeah. So does that answer the question? Was I veering off? I'm not sure. Like I think I was.
No, it's great.
No. That's I actually love that.
Okay.
Question. I mean, many of our most rewarding creative partnerships and relationships have also started with, "Hey, we need someone for this, and we've got some money."
Right.
It's like I just want to ask, like, absolutely. What was your then very new wife's reaction to, "Hey, I'm gonna go do this," because that's amazing.
I'm gonna go make.
No, she was she was very very supportive, and she saw my skill, and she knew that I was good, and she was very, very supportive. And so even much so, she was becoming like, she was like the breadwinner in the whole thing. So it's like, she was willing to work for us, full time while I worked sort of part time. Like I would work another job and then I would do comics. So it was just endless, just like I would go work and then I would come back, draw comics and then draw comics full time and then work. And then it was just like, I would do all these little jobs. So I didn't have like, I had like part-time job with this and then that sort of made a full-time job. I don't know. Anyways, it was just like that. She had a job, a secure paycheck and all that kind of stuff. And so now everything's just gotten, oh, well, anyways, I don't want to veer off again. Just answer that question. Like she supported me through the whole thing. When it got to, it was just funny when it just got to a certain point, we were like, because in the beginning I was so sure, like when I was doing these other comic book projects, this was like just funny. I thought I was so good at drawing. Right. And I thought I was going to land something with something with Marvel, DC, IDW, something. And it never happened. Right. And so like, I gave myself like 2 years, to do something, to land something, to get something. And it just hadn't happened that way. And so then eventually, but that humbled me and it got me to a point where, okay, so I gotta seek out something. And I really prayed and that's what happened. And it's like, then I got the thing with Nandor, but my wife was very supportive. And then it just got to a point where like, it sort of turned into, you have a roommate, he's staying with us for a certain amount of time and it's like, okay, when is he moving out? You know, kind of feeling. It's like, when is this gonna lift off? But eventually it was just like I had so much support for her, and I would not have been doing comic books if it wasn't for her. And so now we're at a good spot now, and awesome. I'm able to support her, and she's gonna be, you know, stay at home mom and everything, and while I'm home illustrating and stuff, so it's pretty good.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's
so now amazing. I'm giving it back. So cool. I'm paying it back. And,
yep. Yep. Yeah.
Well, I want to talk more about the seasons in general and some of the way you guys work. But actually, let's take a step back and actually give us a little more of your kind of art history, if you will, as well, Anthony. So like, have you been someone that's always been drawing, or kind of what led you to comics? Like what's some
well, I've just kind of been drawing ever since I could lift up a pencil. I mean, I, you know, my mom will, you know, she'll tell stories like, oh, he was drawing on the wall, you know, it's like, and when he was like two, and and these were just like unbelievable stick figures, you know, there was all sorts of details. And, you know, she'll say like that, like I've had that story, I'm sure. You've heard that from other artists and stuff or something, right? You know, but I've always been into comic books, but just picture wise, it was just like just enjoying reading comics. I've had, you know, one or two comic books here and there growing up. I never was a collector I think late middle school or something like that, like middle school, eighth grade, seventh grade, something like that. And then I stopped collecting comic books for a while, but it was always like specific artists like Greg Capello or Capullo from Spawn. That was like, I think I was issue 52 with the appearance of Savage Dragon in the issue. And that was the first Spawn comic book I got. And that's
where I remember it well. Yeah.
Yeah. That changed everything. So for me, and, And so how I draw and how detailed I wanted to be. So I would copy him all the time and just steal his, like, his artwork and draw it with other things or something like that. Up until a very late, like time in my life too. It was like early on when I was a kid, and still just, I'd always reference his work. And then anyways, and yeah. And then it, like I said, like I would just buy comic books purely for the pictures. And I had no sense of like, I just didn't look into story. I didn't look into story structure, didn't care. I didn't even come to mind. It's not that I talked to people and they bored me with it. I just didn't know about it. No one ever talked about story. No one ever talked about sequential art. No one ever, you know, told me about any of these things like, oh, hey, you should do comics. Like, I never had like a buddy with that. I never had anybody who was into comic books like that. And then I just fell out of comics and I got into movies. So movies were the biggest influence on me growing up ever since I was a kid. And I think like it was the horror genre. It was like Alien and It were a big influence on me when I was like very young. Army of Darkness was another one that I saw when I was very young. And these sort of changed my whole perspective on that. That's,
they scared the crap out of you is what you mean, right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I never, it's like, yeah, they would scare me and that's what, yeah, that's what I enjoyed about it. And so, yeah, so from there, I got out of comics and just went full into movies, and I wanted to, you know, write and direct, and I wanted to do everything. You know, nothing came of that because I didn't want to do anything in Hollywood. I didn't want to have anything to do with it. I didn't want to just, I didn't want to have any, it's not that I, it's like, I've had chances to get into stuff, but I didn't do it. I didn't take hold of it. I didn't share the values of Hollywood. I didn't share values with any of the things I was ever seeing, but they influenced me greatly. And I saw that there was something there that needed to be done. And I was just so captivated by how it really did influence the culture, influence people, how they think and how they feel. And I always thought that art was always a very, very important thing. And so, yeah, so that's what, that's, so cinematography, all the technicalities about movie, all the technicalities, all the technical stuff about movies, and, really, helped me and shaped me and my art. And then I eventually got back into comic books. And started reading them, started actually reading them. And I'm like, oh, these are actually good. And
you were like, these actually have words?
Like, right, yeah. And they actually, it's like they carry along. Like you can draw these pictures in such a way where it carries along the story. I mean, yeah, I really did was thinking these things. I mean, like, I know that people, you know, reading comic books or something like that, and they could just like, oh yeah, that's how it is. It's sequential art. It's supposed to carry along the story, Anthony. But it's like, I didn't care. I was just like not into comic books until I actually started reading them. And it was like a lot of independent stuff. And yeah, I never was into the big names out there. And it was all independent works. And that's what I was really into. Started reading them. I met somebody, like a friend of mine, who I started working on a book with him. That was the first superhero genre like I worked in, and it's online. You can check it out. You can read it and everything. And it's like, I did only like one issue, but I learned a lot from there. And the guy that I was, he was really into comic, like really into comic books. And I, as you get to know me, I am not that, I'm not into, I mean, like Nandor, he's really into, I am not like this. I'm not a geek about it, but I do geek out. So, you know, you'll see, sure. you'll see that it's, but I, yeah, I just, so, but we shared a common thing about story and all this different things. And so, yeah, that helped develop it. So, you know, to get into the medium again and really, but I've been always drawing comic books here and there, and I've been always doing it since I was a kid. And yeah, I didn't really think about it being something I can do until I read like something that I can actually write a story. I really felt compelled to actually move forward and actually do something on my own or draw comics was like when I was like reading Duck to Maple stuff, and he really influenced me a lot. And yeah, so.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, Anthony, but like, what's, oh, what I always find, What I'm always impressed about too, like you're talking about, like your art history is like, you know, you're self-taught, you know, like you didn't go to school, you know, and the ability you have, you know, I'm just like it wows me to no end, you know, every time we work on a page, you know, I'm always like, and you just do this intuitively, huh? You know?
Yeah.
Well, it's, you know, I mean, they're it's funny. I mean, one of so, you know, one of my mentors is a guy named Brian Stalfries, who a lot of people would know from, you know, Black Panther and a bunch of other stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I did go to art school, but his advice to me when I went to art school is, he's like, you know, when you go, like, just be aware, like, there's nothing you're going to learn there that you can't learn on your own.
Right.
It's just a shortcut.
Right.
And I really do believe that. It's just, you know, it's a condensing of time frames, you know, depending on how you do it. But, you know, I took a lot of things from what you said, Anthony, but I want to ask you about a couple, like, just to, so I remember that issue of Spawn that you mentioned. I remember being, you know, very impacted by Capullo's work at that point as well. Mm-hmm. And I think you can see, like, some of that rendering, you know, that kind of desire to kind of render and add detail and, like, really depict things in a particular way. Like, I can kind of pull that out in your work. And yet so much of my, you know, what I see in your work is much more kind of realistic and, you know, really incredibly strong figure work and just, you know, really dynamic compositions. And you can see some of that kind of, you know, image influence to a degree, but it's also, you know, really your own thing. And so I'm just, is that just like where you gravitated, like, you know, being able to handle the, you know, figure work as elegantly and as with as much sophistication as you do doesn't just happen for most people. So you know, is that something that you really put a lot of attention on, or are you just you know, you're just naturally you know, an art savant?
Well, I guess I could, like, it's like I really wanted things to just, it all comes down to like I was a perfectionist. I wanted things to just be perfect with this. Like, I wanted it to be every little detail done, every little thing that it needed to be correct. Like the way the shirt fell, the way the hair, mm-hmm, blew in the wind, or if it was running this way, what would happen here? And so I was always really focused on that all the time, and it would drive me nuts. And so I was I really, really wanted to become like an artist, like James Herron, or mm-hmm, just very, like, to have like a cartoonish kind of look to it. But it just hadn't worked out. So because I enjoy the amount of detail that I put in my work, and I enjoy doing that. It's really fun. And so when I would read, when I finally got into manga eventually, it really, yep, changed the way I would draw. Like, it really did. Like, you can, it, that happened like right before I was working on Seasons. Like, I started reading manga a lot more. I started, like, actually letting, mm-hmm, that influence my work a lot more. So, like, you'll see, like, movement, you'll see a lot of dynamic, yeah, shots, you'll see this realistic sort of way that I draw, but with, like, it's almost like a cartoony type of motion here and there sometimes, like, mm-hmm, you'll see that I'm really trying to perfect that. And so yeah, so I don't know, I just, yeah, drawing realistically, I just have not been able to get away from it. I have been really wanting to change my direction and how I draw, but I just can't get away from how realistic I draw everything.
Yeah. Well, I think is awesome about it. And, you know, I'm a firm believer in, you know, I think both, as writer and artist, and probably in creative process and style in general, that, you know, it's very hard, if not impossible, to authentically create a style.
Right.
That, you know, your style just kind of is the way that you see the world. And I think, you know, you see a lot of, especially in comics, a lot of people that are trying to draw like someone, you know, X or Y or Z, or, you know, you can see the influences. And sometimes that you know, evolves into something really wonderful. And sometimes it just feels like, oh, you're just, you know, doing your version of Jim Lee, or, you know, whatever. And especially, you know, especially in my era of growing up with comics, that there was a lot of that. And I would be one of those people at a certain point. But I think, you know, what I think is kind of amazing in all that you've shared is that it really does feel like, you know, the work that you're putting out is also, you know, very mature. And so the combination of what you guys are doing, I think, really does just fit kind of hand in glove. And it I can see the influences that you're talking about, but it doesn't ever feel to me like, oh, you know, that's him, you know, copying something from a, you know, a manga project, or, you know, this is, you know, clearly, you know, being taken from, you know, this other influence, or, you know, that sort of thing. It really feels like you've synthesized those things in a way that you're able to kind of authentically communicate, you know, what you're trying to do with the story in a way that it is unique and it's awesome. So I, you know, for better or worse, I think you got your style. It may evolve, but you've got one.
Well, thanks. Yeah, thanks. It's the one thing that, like, I was, yeah, like, I am really trying to develop it and make it stronger, and you know, and Seasons has really helped out with that, and I'm going to dedicate, like, more time. So just as the years go by now, from, like, now until, you know, whatever, you'll see it get better and better. I've seen that with the book. Yeah. I mean, if you read through spring from till now, it's evolved, I guess you could say.
You can definitely see the evolution. I mean, it's the 10,000 hours, you know, of work that's obviously been put in at this point. But I mean, you see the evolution, but it still feels like you. And I think that is a relative rarity, you know, at again, sort of a relatively early stage in both of your careers and in this project together. And I just applaud, you know, how wonderfully it works together. Oh, yeah. So, it's really beautiful.
Well, thanks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, Nando, so I just want to come back, because obviously, Anthony, you talked about the idea of story and how understanding of story developed partly through working together. So, Nando, when you wrote the script for this, like, what is your writing process when it comes to comics specifically? Like, did you kind of write a screenplay and then adapt it, or are you writing panels? Like, how much direction are you doing within the script? Because there's obviously a huge kind of variation in terms of how comic scripts are approached.
Right.
I'm always intrigued by writers who, you know, as you explore that process, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And how has it evolved?
Right.
Yeah.
It's definitely, yeah. like I'd say it has evolved for sure. But like beginning wise, like, you know, when I started, when I had the idea for Seasons, I was like, you know, I knew I wanted it to be a comic. I mean, the first hurdle was, okay, well, how do you write a comic script, you know? And because, you know, I always heard of, you know, being such a fan of Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, I always heard of the Marvel method. And I always thought that was a really strange way to write a story. Yeah. and I was like, well, I don't have an illustrator. I don't have someone that I can work with. So, like, I need to, you know, I need to write this out. I have this, it's the, like, fifth anniversary edition of the Nightly News by Jonathan Hickman, who's a really big influence, writing wise when it comes to comics. But, in that anniversary, like, collection, there's a script, there's a comic book script of Nightly News issue one. And, cause I was like, okay, how do people write comics? And then I was like, oh, I think there's a script in, like, one of my graphic novels I have. And so I looked at that and I thought, okay, well, let me kind of, like, copy the structure of the way the script is written. And then, you know, I've found my own, preferences, and my own way of scripting has evolved. So, like, I do write full script, and that's what I have for Seasons. And I, you know, I write, you know, page one, five panels, you know, and I write each panel and what's happening. And I, at the time, you know, I wrote what, was important, you know, for the scene, but, I knew that I didn't want to, I was thinking ahead and I was like, well, I know I don't want to write something to where, I can't collaborate, or it's just so overly detailed, like Alan Moore, where it's just like, you know, every single, you know, like part of the panel, an inch of the panel is, you know,
described in detail.
Uh-huh. So I was like, okay, I know I don't want to do that, but I know I need to write down exactly what I want to see. And so that's how I began writing. And then as I started working with Anthony, and I love our storyboard sessions, because what we'll do is we'll sit down together and we'll read through the script together, and, you know, we'll, he'll interpret, you know, the script, and I'll, you know, we'll edit it together as we go along with the storyboards. And, we found that, you know, what works for us is like, basically, you know, the script is like the architectural document, you know, it's like the blueprint. And from there, you know, if Anthony is like, hey, like, I think this would be a better shot. And, you know, I'm like, okay, well, like, you know, like, let's see what it looks like. And let's see what you're talking about. And, and things will evolve, because as we're working through a page together, you know, I want it to feel exciting and spontaneous. And, and I know I'm not, even though I have all these visuals in my head, I know I'm not like, you know, where Anthony is visually. So it's like, I take what he says, you know, like, into account so much, because I'm like, you know, I want this to be fun for him to draw, and I want it to be exciting for him to draw.
Yes.
And, I don't want to just be like, this is what you have to do. You know, it's like, I've always wanted a collaboration, you know, it's like, even though, this was my idea and something that, you know, I create all these characters, and I would send him layouts too. Like, I would lay out, like, this is what I was thinking for it. As we've grown together in our collaboration, like, that has somewhat gone out the window, just because, like, I trust him, and, like, I know what he's going to bring to the table is, you know, is far better than what I could think of. And so, from there, it just kind of evolved organically. But I still, for me, what helps with my writing process really is, you know, I have notebooks galore, and I just write down all these ideas and all these things. And, like, I never leave my house without, like, having a notebook. Like, I always keep a notebook with me.
Is it actually like a physical notebook? Because I have a similar thing on my iPhone that I'm, like, writing down ideas constantly, but you actually carry like a moleskin or something.
Yeah, I do. I carry a physical notebook because I just, you know, I never want to, like, lose things. And I know, okay, you know, like, you know, I don't want anything to get lost or deleted or accidentally, you know, deleted or anything. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to make sure this is physically down to where, you know, I'll have it, and I'll have it forever. And there's this really great quote. I think it's by Robert Louis Stevenson. And he said, like, you know, I always carry two things with me, a book to read and a book to write in. And that's, like, basically, basically me to a T, because that's what I do, like, all the time. But, but yeah, I just write a ton of ideas. And, like, I still have all my notebooks where I wrote down my first ideas for seasons and everything. And, I keep those, and I'll look back on them. I'm like, whoa, this is so cool to, like, kind of retread and look at. And then, but I do that, and then I'll go to, you know, a Word document or whatever. And then I'll, kind of script it from there. And I do outline, but I mainly outline the story, and then like I outlined spring, but I mainly just write out the story, and then I break apart where I'm like, okay, this would be the end of issue one, and then this would be the end of issue two. I don't really like doing bullet points too much, because I feel like it's a little too constraining. It's like I need more room, and so I don't want to, like, constrain myself too much to where I feel like I'm just hitting all the parts. I need it to feel more organic when I'm writing it.
Right. It's funny, because I feel like we tend to write in that way as well. We'll have the kind of germ of the idea, and then we'll think, great, what would, if this was a TV show, where would season 1, 2, 3, 4?
Right.
And then, okay, So let's then think about, so what would the episodes be? How would we tell the story episodically? And then we kind of make sure that that works organically with the characters. But it is that same kind of working backwards from, here's the global idea of where I want to be at the end of this time. Mm-hmm. Now, how does this work to get there?
Yeah, it's always like, like as a writer, something I tell people too is like, when you're starting out and you're trying to develop a story, really what you do is you just ask yourself questions all the time. Like it's basically answering your own questions. Like that's the best way you can tell a story, because you have to be the one that thinks of everything and the one that contests everything. And if you can do that and you basically kind of bring it to the bare bones of like what it, like, you know, you cut all the fat off and you make it as strong as it can be, then no one else can look at it and like poke holes in it.
Right.
Yeah.
No.
An add-on question to that. So, I mean, you were writing blogs and things like that, but you seem to have a very good kind of sense of structure and kind of overall narrative arc, and certainly a really strong sense of character and kind of how to use those things as tools over the course of a chunk of a story and then a larger story. Like, is that stuff that you really dove into as something to try to learn, or is it also just kind of innate? Are you guys just wonder? Sort
of really we're like, just prodigies. No, like I don't.
Yeah,
it was really. I didn't study it, you know, like I didn't read books on story. Like I didn't do a lot of research. I think I just absorb so much when I'm reading and when I'm watching something, and I just like, I love watching special features. I love learning about how things are made and like, watching interviews with writers and with artists. And so I kind of took all of that information that I had kind of acquired and developed over the years. And it's funny because, you know, a lot of people would think that comics, you know, can be a throwaway entertainment, to where, you know, like you read an issue in like, you know, maybe 15 to 20 minutes, and then you just like, you know, put it away and you maybe never read it again. But I've always been someone that it takes me a long time to get through something, because I like analyzing things. And I just like, if there's a certain scene in a comic book issue or something, like, you know, finish it, you know, real quickly, I just like taking my time with it. And so I think that's just something I've always had. And then when I started kind of constructing the story, I knew it was very ambitious, and I really thought about like, okay, if I'm going to do this, you know, I have to do it right, and I have to do it as best as I can. Mm-hmm. And so I took my time with it, and I tried to put everything in there that I wanted to see and that I thought would be, you know, moving to people and dramatic and interesting. And, you know, like my goal was, you know, I want to make people excited and invested. And also like, I want them to be moved by it. And, you know, I want to bring you to tears. I want to make you laugh. I want to, you know, bring you on this journey and have you, you know, just like, applaud for the character and also feel for the character. And any way I could do that, that was my like motivation and was my goal to do. And so that's really kind of where it came from, where I thought about all my favorite scenes from movies or TV shows, and I would go, how did they do that? Like, how did they get me to that point? Mm-hmm. How did they take me out of it? What was the closure? What was the beginning of the scene? And just started from there and thought, okay. And really what I do anytime I start a story too is, you know, I really write down, you know, it's probably, I guess you could say it's a thesis, where it's like one or two sentences where it's like, this is the theme of the story, and everything that I write has to in some way, you know, correlate to that and relate to that. And, you know, whether it's, you know, indirectly or directly, and just like have that be my anchor, and then everything else I do, it'll work because it's consistent.
Right.
It's very cool.
Yeah.
Thanks. I'm impressed. Yeah, it's very cool. So actually we should have done this early on. We may cut this and insert it at the beginning, but give us actually I'm gonna put Anthony on the spot. Give us your pitch for what Seasons is and what the story's about, and then we'll let Andor do his version of it as well. But I want to hear yours.
Seasons first. Is about a Omega, somebody that no one thinks about, cares about, but he's put himself in this position. It's not like he was like a born Omega or anything like that or Gamma, but he was this sort of creepy loser type of guy who's in like thinking about this girl obsesses over this girl, and that sort of brings out something in him that he didn't know was ever there. And is it something that good or evil? I don't know. See, there you go. That's my pitch. I'm so terrible at pitching Seasons, like talking about it, and like, because it gets into the philosophical in a way, right? You have to, you know, bring the name into it and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, so this guy obsesses over this girl, and it brings out something in him that's either good or bad. And is it something that, you know, sort of you start introducing other elements into his life? Is it something he's going to run from or fight? And yeah, so you just have to find out. So I guess hopefully that answers the question.
All right, well, Nader, there's no way you can.
Yeah, try.
It. Give us your give us your.
Yeah, the artist savant.
What is
this is why you draw. No, I'm joking.
Exactly. Right, because artist savant is really close to idiot savant, so it's like so.
There's a lot of there's a big gray area between those two.
Right.
Yeah. That's a lot of overlap.
I know what you're all thinking. Okay.
No, I do want to preface it because I've always, you know, when I pitch Seasons to anyone, like if I'm at a convention or you know, I'm just talking to some, you know, random stranger or another creator or someone who wants to do an interview or for the newspaper or something, you know, someone will ask me about it, and like my head starts spinning because from my point of view, it's so many things, and it's such a big project, and it is so ambitious because, you know, in the end, there's going to be like 500 pages of, you know, of art and like of comic book script. And, you know, like I'm thinking about it as a whole, and I'm like, how can I actually succinctly like put this into words, you know, in a sentence or two. And so it's always been a challenge for me to pitch it, but, I get it because you can break it apart by volume, or you can, you know, put it as a whole. And so it's always been a challenge. Seasons is a superhero supernatural story. It's a drama at its core, you know, with those elements, and it follows this young man through 1 year of his life, and with each passing season, he gains new powers and abilities. And it's a story about identity and introspection and the need for personal responsibility. And with each season, the main character, Fletcher Hart Eames, is faced with these challenges, these external challenges that teach him about who he is as a person. And these are things, and whether it be, you know, an obstacle, you know, that's more ethereal or spiritual in a sense, or actually a physical being that's in his way, like a villain, so to speak. You know, he has to overcome those with each season, and he has to learn who he is, and he's trying to find purpose and meaning, and who is he as a person, and what does he have to offer the world? And so it's deeply symbolic and philosophical in that sense. And then on the surface, you know, as you look at it, and you see this especially in the second volume, where what he's facing are basically to the naked eye, the human eye, you know, they'd be natural disasters, but he sees these people, these beings that kind of inhabit and that are representations of these natural disasters, and he has to face them and fight them. And so with each season, there will be, like, for the first one, it was himself, he was the enemy. In the second season, it's nature, and it's and then for the third and the fourth, I'll be yet to reveal those, but like there'll be different things for him to kind of you know, fight and see, like, what he's actually, where his place in the world is, and in accordance with those.
Nice, very cool.
He read that.
That's pretty good.
He read that. Yeah,
that's what
you
labored over,
right,
in the description on the
website. He ad libbed some stuff there, but he was reading that.
No, it's pretty good. I think, you know, for me, what strikes a chord, number one, I wish you were dealing with some themes that were at all relatable to people in general. Saying that very facetiously, obviously, but I think what's, you know, what's interesting about it too, and I think this is what you know, great storytelling often does, you know, is you're dealing with kind of some very fundamental and in some ways simple themes. But finding a way to deliver those in a, you know, in a very, in some ways very personal, but also very relatable, mm-hmm. and, you know, way dressed up in tropes of genre and you know, things that we also kind of enjoy, exactly, from a pure entertainment, level. And so I think it's working on all those levels, and that often is the stuff that,
yeah,
that we all really,
like,
respond to and love.
I kind of see it in some ways like a magic trick, you know, like I'm showing you this, mm-hmm. you know, these epic scenes and this, like, you know, it's dressed as a supernatural, you know, like somewhat superhero like story, but you know, it's a way to kind of, you know, bring you in, and then as you read it, you're like, this isn't that, you know, you're like, this is something completely more, you know, more deeper than what you think. And so, you know, I always want people to find that and discover that for themselves, because you know, that way they'll find what they really, it's like, if I tell them how they should see it or view it, I don't want it to ruin their perception of it, you know, because, you know, to the one person that I say has mm-hmm. superhero elements, they're like, I hate superhero stories. And then to the other person, you know, if I say supernatural, they're like, well, you know, that's such a broad statement, what do you mean? And so it's mm-hmm. just like,
of course,
yeah, you know, it right. becomes very difficult. And I'm like, well, it's all of these things combined and more, and you have to look at it, and hopefully Anthony's art will bring you to it. You know, like one of my favorite, you know, kind of, adages that I've heard is, for comics is you come for the art and you stay for the story. And that's nice, what I really, yeah, that's what I really like.
Yeah.
That's, I think that's true.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It is when you've got someone like Anthony, you know, painting beautiful pictures. Yeah, absolutely. No, that's awesome. Well, guys, I just applaud the work that you're doing. You know, it's really fantastic stuff. And I'm very excited to also have it be a part of the mix of stuff that we're putting out on Macroverse. So let's talk about kind of where you are in the process. I know we've also got a Kickstarter running at the moment, so we want to make sure and mention that. But, you know, the whole first volume is done. right? Spring is complete in book form. We're in the process of adapting that and releasing it on Macroverse as well. And in my very, very biased opinion, I'd say, you know, a kind of completely reimagined experience of how you can kind of go through that story. And then you're completely unbiased. Yes. and then you guys have just launched the Kickstarter for Volume 2 right now. So talk a little bit about kind of where that's at and, you know, what people's support, you know, means to you and the project and, you know, how people can get involved in helping this amazing stuff continue.
So yeah, we have Seasons Volume 2 Summer on Kickstarter right now. It's going to run through the end of October. We launched it on October 1st, and right now we're sitting at, 43% funded in the first 6 days. So like, that's really, really good.
Not too shabby.
Yeah. Yeah. So awesome. we're on the track, you know, to getting funded and everything. So that's really exciting. And, you know, we encourage everyone to check out the Kickstarter and, you know, help support it. And you can get both volumes, through there too. So if you missed out on Volume 1, there's an early bird. Actually, it ends tomorrow morning, but I don't know when this goes live. But there's different rewards where you can get volumes 1 and 2 at a good price there for people that want to catch up. And you know, this really, you know, the Kickstarters for us are really, you know, the telling point where, you know, we kind of reevaluate, you know, like, do people like what we're creating? And, you know, like, how much support are we actually going to get from this? And, you know, it's really the defining moment and the place, you know, where everything converges and you're like, okay, like, you know, if this works, we can keep on going. You know, if it doesn't work, we're going to have to kind of rethink things. And so, you know, for people that want the series to continue, we really encourage to back it and support it, because that way we can continue making the story. And, you know, if we get Volume 2 done, we're going to want to work on Volume 3 and start creating that and putting that out. And so, you know, it's the only way we can keep making this if, you know, we get the support we need for it, so that we can print it, you know, get it in stores, get it everywhere we can, get it online, and, you know, just make sure that we have content for people, and that, you know, for the people that have been with us since the very beginning, you know, they want to see the end. They want to see winter come out, you know, and so, and we want to see that too. You know, we want to complete this series, but we can only do that, you know, through the support of our fans and people that really enjoy the story. And so, you know, and it's online, free to read, you know, it's on Macroverse too. And I know the first three episodes are on there, and I think that's the best place to read it on a comics app. And then, you know, for people that need to know the entire story, if, you know, they want to, you know, kind of be sure they like it, you know, the first volume is free to read on seasonsthecomicbook.com. You know, that's over 100 pages, you know, that they can get into and really see if they like it. And the first 50 pages are on the website as well of Summer. So if they want to check that out, you know, and it's all free, you know, we want people to read it, and we want people to check it out. And, you know, it's amazing. Like, you know, I'm biased in saying it, but, you know, it's funny, because even though I'm biased about the story, you know, I don't have to be biased about the art, because I'm a you know, I'm a comic book fan, and I'm an art fan, you know, outside of my own work. And, you know, I see anything Anthony would do, I would support it anyways, you know, even if I didn't know him, because I would love it. And, you know, that's what had me gravitate, you know, finding him and trying, you know, finding someone who could tell the story, you know, it's, you want someone really good. And so it's like, you see it, you know, when you see it, you see it. And so that's what I saw. And, you know, whatever, I'm just thankful to have Anthony with me on this journey together, because I know no one else could bring it out like he does.
Yeah.
No question. It's a beautiful match. You guys both chose to say right.
Gross analogy.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, very cool. Well,
I'm still getting paid. And support the thing so I can keep getting paid. No, I enjoy the project.
Well, you've got a
right. Yeah,
you got a baby.
I do have ulterior motives. And
there you go.
Yes.
Yeah, that's
right.
Do it for the kids.
Don't
people.
Do it for the children.
Think of the children. Awesome. Well, I'm definitely a big fan of what you guys are doing. I feel like it's a privilege for us to get to work with you guys and play with you guys and kind of bring it to our thing as well. So, appreciate that. We do hope people will support the Kickstarter, check it out on Macroverse, continue to engage with it. Where else can people find you guys on the interwebs if they want to keep up with what you're doing? What are the socials and all that good stuff?
You can just go to my website. It's daydreamcontinuum.com. I've had that name for a while. It's like something that my brother, he asked for like a business name, and I came up with that name for him like years ago, and he never used it, so I used it, and I was like, and I thought it was such a good name. I was like, yeah. So I've kept it, and so daydreamcontinuum.com, that's where you can just find everything that I, whatever I have, blog on there, I have art that I put on there, other stuff that I do, and other things that I'm going to be doing on my own writing or my own graphic novel. So, and then like my Instagram handle is like Anthony DG Clark on Instagram, and same thing on Twitter. So if you look up Anthony DG Clark on pretty much any of the social media, you can just find me on there like that. And seasonscomicbook.com. You can just, that's where you read the book. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And Macroverse. That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is like a very unbiased, very unbiased. I really do much enjoy the what you did for the for Seasons on there. I really enjoyed reading it on there.
Brilliant.
Yeah, and I'm on
thank you.
Twitter. It's not at Nondor Fox, and then Instagram is at Nondor F Schaefer, seasonsofcomicbook.com. I'm mainly more prevalent on Instagram and Twitter than my Facebook. But if people, want to find me on Facebook, I'm sure I'm the only person in America named Nondor. So like you'll find me.
Nondor. Yeah.
Let's digress for 1 second. Where did that come from?
Nondor is Hungarian. My mom, Nondor. she's from Hungary, and she was born there, and she met my dad here in the States, and they decided to give my brother and I, the most annoying names for people to try to pronounce, like when I remember, this was really, I remember when I was going to college and we all had to introduce ourselves, or the teacher was introducing us, and the teacher called me out and said, Nondor Fox Schaefer, and I was like, wait a second, I was like, that's like first, it's Nondor, and then lastly, it's Schaefer, it's Hungarian. So my name's Nondor, my brother's name is Miklos.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, very cool.
That's kind of a cool name. Yeah, I like that. I always the Bottle City of Candor.
I love that, that's
my association.
I've gotten Gondor from Lord of the Rings, so
neither of those are too shabby, right? It's both something to be proud
very
of
cool.
Yeah, and for more indulgence into nerddom, Fox is actually my parents were big X-Files fans, so
That's funny.
So you would think it's the animal, but it's actually Dave Duchovny from
Mulder. Yeah,
that's right.
That's cool. Pretty awesome.
The more I find out about you, Nahandor, I like you less. It just gets nerdier and nerdier. No, I don't have anything against nerds. It's okay.
Not sure you can blame him for his parents' nerdiness. I feel like, that's...
I also don't think anyone
has versions in that way. Yeah,
say anything about.
I'm trying to reclaim it as more of a manly medium now, so I can beat up all the nerds and
right,
exactly.
Yeah, just the guy you want to meet at.
That's just why I don't go. No.
Oh, you're cosplaying. You're cosplaying as my kid.
No, that'd be really cool if somebody actually did do that.
Yeah, it'd be like, okay, we'll win you over, Anthony. This is how it actually is.
It was.
Welcome to the cult is what's happening right now.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's the indoctrination period.
Well, cool. I mean, I think we're almost wrapped up, but guys, we always end with something that we have a question for you both. We ask you what your Hoojama flip is, and just so you're clear, Hoojama flip is simply like a British term meaning kind of that thing I can't quite remember, but so we've come to define it as whatever is top of mind for you kind of outside of your immediate work. It's like, what are you watching, what are you reading, what games you like, whatever it might be. What is your Hoojama flip of the week? So whichever one of you wants to go. We didn't prepare you for this at all. So it's a kind of instant recall thing.
Even better.
Go first, Nahandor. I gotta think.
Okay, yeah. Right off the top of my head, I've been reading Dostoevsky's Crime and Punishment. And which, probably sounds very highbrow for what. Maybe not, I guess, for the themes I've been trying to kind of conquer with seasons and with my writing. But the reason why it's on my mind right now is because I started it a long time ago, like a few years ago. And I stopped reading it because it was just too dense and it was like too much. But I started reading it again about 2-3 months ago. And I've been like I said before, I really take my time with things. So I've been taking my time with it and trying to, get through it. And I finally just made it halfway through. So I'm getting there, but I've been trying to,
it's a journey.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. And, I've been really trying to read more classics, and this was one that I had on my list. And, I have a massive bookshelf full of classics and that was one I really wanted to, take on. And so there have been times where I've really struggled through it because it's just there's a lot of Russian names in it. And like there's just a lot of people to keep track of. And I'm like, man, I'm having a difficult time getting through this. But I just got to take my time with it. And I don't care if it takes me the rest of the year to finish it. Like I'll finish it. But that's been on my mind. So I've been reading that, and it's been really, really amazing to dive into.
Very cool.
That's amazing. I think you're gold star for the most literary answer to this question up to this point.
So what's very my cool. like been my main focus? Is that like the
Or just like, whatever it is. It's like it could be a book you're reading, it could be a TV show you're enjoying, like, it could be a game, it could be whatever it might be, whatever's kind of intriguing you at the moment.
Podcast.
Oh, jeez.
When
I'm not drawing or like that, I'm mostly just spending time with my son every chance I can pretty much get. He's newborn. He's going to be 4.5 months, and it's been a trip.
It has been
great. Just watching him. Just develop and seeing all little new things that he does every single day. And so that's been really great. And then, the other focus is I'm in the process of getting a house. And so I'm like, just going through that right now. I'm just under like, it's just, we're waiting for some response or something. And so just focusing on that. And, for anything sort of just reading right now, or culture stuff, I guess, I don't know. It's like, I read this fantasy series by an author called, his name is David Gemmell. And, I recommend all of you to read it. It's a book called The Sword in the Storm, and it's a 4-book series. I'm rereading the series right now. And I really, it's like, it's a very important book to me. One of the characters in there, I named my son after one of the characters in there. So, so my wife let me do that,
and that character's name is
it's cool. Riem Fada, but we named him Riem, so we used half the name.
Nice.
And so that's one of my favorite characters in the book, and I recommend everybody should read that book. It's just a very good, well thought out story. It's not super wordy, so it's not like it's a fantasy book, but it's not like a thick, like 800 page, it's like 400 pages or less or something like that, and it's just like straight plot, good characters,
right.
Everything's just great. I really do enjoy it, and yeah, I just love that book so much. And so that's what I've been, pretty much all I've pretty much had time to do. So I, you know, if I'm not drawing seasons, I'm drawing something else, another project I'm doing or something, or doing my own writing and doing some, like, yeah, just things, something like that. But yeah, so that's what, yeah, I'm just with my son and trying to read these books. That's it. Yeah. Sword in the Storm is
the
first book.
And that's called The Sword in the Storm.
So you'll see, you know, once you start there, you'll see the other 3 books that are there. It's a 4-book series, and really great. I really do recommend you guys read that book. Very good.
Love it.
I think so. We just finished Raised by Wolves last week, which actually, I love that Ridley Scott series on HBO.
Yeah.
Really, really cool, interesting themes that kind of, you know, atheism versus faith and the shifting loyalties and kind of hypocrisies in both of those, which is kind of brilliant. And then an incredibly disappointing finale, which was absolutely infuriating. Just sloppy writing. Just
kind of heartbreaking.
Top to bottom, really. And then Boys, which has been the opposite, which has just got better and better and better. And I cannot wait for Friday. Mm-hmm. I will indulge myself on Friday for an hour. Early in the morning and watch what promises to be an insane finale.
Yes, I echo your disappointment in the finale of Raised by
the flying snake unleashed into the Garden of Eden.
It's been so good up to this point. Really?
None of it makes sense.
Yes.
None of it makes sense.
Not to give anything away. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, I tried to get into The Boys, not the TV series. I tried to read the book. I got like the first, because Garth Ennis. I think it was the Cross series, the first book that he did, not the all the other stuff. I didn't read anything of that. I just read the first volume, and I really did like that first volume. And I forgot what else I read by him. I think I read a little bit of Preacher, Punisher, and then The Boys. I've never been able to get through any of his long series. I couldn't get through The Boys.
Yeah.
So I don't know if the TV series is any better.
it's different. I mean, you might find it easier to consume, you know, in a moving format. That requires
I always enjoy the comic. I always enjoy the comic book and like a lot better. And so, I've never been able to get through a lot of Garth Ennis. Yeah. So anyways, I didn't mention The Boys.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, he can be pretty dense on the page for sure, but I did enjoy the comic.
Yeah, like the problem with like Garth Ennis is like he doesn't like heroes, and so I don't connect to that. Like when he's kind of he creates his heroes to be so wretched and awful people, and like no one, you don't, everything's black or white. I mean nothing, everything's gray. Everything is like you don't know who to like and who to root for. I hate that.
You're saying that so funny. You're saying everything that I love about that.
I can't stand it. I just feel like if you ever read David Gemmell, it's all really like It's the opposite of the total opposite of it's like anti Ennis. It's like yeah.
That's funny. Well, yeah, it's I mean, if you're yeah, if you're not looking for Shades of Grey, yeah, right, then you probably want to avoid The Boys in general. Right. It's definitely all Shades of Grey. Cool. So yeah, I think, you know, I'll recommend two things. One of them I mentioned before, but I'm just kind of obsessed with it right now, which is a podcast, and it's also a YouTube show called Cartoonist Kayfabe. It's two guys that are both pretty well-known comics creators, mostly indie comics creators, but they've also done some mainstream works. Cool. It's yeah. Jim Rugg and Ed Piskor. They just deep dive into just, you know, lots of the stuff that was influential for me in my childhood, and just like all kinds of hidden gems from the archives of comics history, everything from super underground to really mainstream. I just watched one yesterday that was there's a single issue of Spider-Man that Bernie Wrightson illustrated, which is just a, you know, really bizarre but amazing, issue. So just, you know, for anyone that loves just comics in general or is interested in sort of all the different sides of the history of comics and sort of the intersection between mainstream and underground and European and just kind of the whole thing. There's a lot of really interesting stuff there. And being both creators and artists themselves, they're able to really dissect a lot of, you know, everything from like what is, you know, I actually just watched one of James Barr with the original release of the kitchen sink printing of The Crow, and they're getting into like, you know, this page is like, oh, you can tell he's like using graphite for the shading on this page, and then on the next page it's like duotone with white out for the highlights, and kind of like everything you could do in a pre-digital, you know, kind of mixed media black and white comic, you know, era. So just really, you know, really deep dives into that kind of stuff for anyone that's interested. And so I just love it. It's, you know, one of my favorite things to put on while I'm, you know, working or doing other stuff that where I can split my attention a little bit. And then the other one I'd recommend, kind of the opposite of that in some ways, is a podcast that Rob Liefeld is putting out right now. And it's called Robservations, and it is quintessential 90s New Mutants Image era kind of recollections from someone that was right in the middle of it. And so, you know, I'm sure there is a certain amount of bias coming through in his storytelling, but it is a fascinating recollection for someone that was right also in the middle of that as a reader and a comics consumer. So those are my two comics related recommendations. What? And then finally, everyone should go read. No. This is a global Kojima flip, which is that everyone should leave this podcast, look in the show notes, and go read. Yep. I will say Seasons on Macroverse, but go read Seasons in general. Support the Kickstarter. Definitely. We definitely want more Seasons of Seasons. So support the Kickstarter. Support these guys. You guys have been wonderful to chat with.
No, it's great.
I love getting into all this kind of process and history stuff with you guys. So I appreciate you guys taking the time, and really love what you guys are doing. So I hope other people will discover it, love it, back it, support it, and stay engaged with it's really kind of mind-boggling to me to think that this is just the beginning of, you know, your careers for both of you. So
thank you so much.
Can't wait to see how this all how this all develops. It's really awesome. So with that, we'll do the official wrap up of the show. Dun dun dun.
So
we're done.
It's Eben again. Thanks for sticking with us through the show. There were a handful of times there I realized listening back to this that it really sounds like I am talking over the top of everybody. And while I have certainly been accused of that at times, and I'll even admit some guilt around doing that occasionally, it was definitely not that bad. Like, it really sounded like we were talking over each other through several sections, and I swear we were listening to each other and having a good time together. So Thanks for putting up with that. I think that this is something I get to blame on the pandemic, as we're all calling in remotely, and it looks like some of the audio was kind of captured as if it was simultaneous, as opposed to actually one person talking and then the other person reacting, or persons in this case. But I apologize for the garbledness of that and appreciate you kind of sticking with it. Imagine it as if it wasn't like that, as if it was the best version of it, and remember it that way. And in the meantime, go check out Seasons on Macroverse. Go check out Seasons on Indiegogo. Back it wherever you want to find it. Back it. This is a awesome series that we're super happy to have on the platform, but also just super happy that it exists in the world. So go check it out. Bye-bye.